body armor, exotic love scents guaranteed to cloud men's minds, herbs and potions and poisons, hollows and 3Ds, cheap crib gear, inflato chairs that leak, expensive crib gear, inflatos that don't leak, thumpers and flutes, three-legged dogs, it barks and it bites but it can't run away, 28 flavors of noodle, and last but not least, Chox bars. First thing, Linnea trades her earrings for a new stock of edibles. She hands Littleface a Chox bar, and almost before he gets the wrapper off, he's grinning like he's just been made king of the latch. "Chox," he chirps, clinging to her shimmering white gown. "Linnea Chox." That freezes me. I save the brat's life more than once and let him come along with us, but he learns to say her name, not mine. Linnea gives me a look that says, "See, I told you." But I pretend not to be annoyed. We've got more important things to worry about. "This way," Linnea says. "I know exactly the man to see." She leads us to one of the larger stalls where three lovely young women offer a variety of love scents. They make their pitch to Ryder, holding out their scented bottles and chanting, "Essence of orchid, essence of rose. Come on, old man, put it under your nose," as if they assume he wants to buy love scents for the beautiful young Prove girl. Ryder waves them off with a smile, while Linnea gets right down to business. "I must speak with your master," she says, keeping her voice low. "Is Bender here?" "Bender is always here," trills one of the love scent girls. She makes a funny bird-like noise, somewhere between a whistle and a laugh, and the man himself appears from behind the curtains at the back of the stall. When he sees who has summoned him, Bender's face lights up. "My dear," he exclaims, "what a wonderful surprise." They say fat is a rich man because only the rich can afford enough edibles to make them fat. If it's true, then Bender must be very rich indeed. He wears the proof of his wealth like some men wear body armor, and he keeps patting his wonderfully plump belly as if to make sure he's well protected by his layer of hard-earned blubber. His face is as round as the rest of him, and just as jolly. Everything about Bender looks jolly except his eyes, which are small and bright and watchful. As he carefully looks us over, he fingers the many small gold rings that are woven into his silky black beard. "I see you have taken a new escort, my dear. Did your text displease you somehow?" "Indeed they did," Linnea says, offering no further explanation. She beckons to Bender, drawing him closer, which seems to make him more than a little nervous. "I'm interested in trading for probes, Bender," she whispers huskily. "Can you help me?" Bender shrinks away as if she's cut him. "Oh, no, my dear, probing is forbidden in this latch. Merely to possess a probe means instant cancellation. To actually trade for them means even worse." "Worse than death?" Linnea asks curiously. "Oh, indeed, there are many things worse than death, and the Latch Queen knows them all. Forget about probing, I beg you." "But surely a prove isn't bound by the same rules," Linnea says, coaxing him. "Surely an exception can be made for me." She reaches out as if to stroke the rings woven into Bender's beard, but he hastily pulls away. "No, my dear, not possible." "But you've made many such exceptions in the past." The traitor shakes his head so hard that the rings in his beard chime, and all of his many chins wobble. "Not for probes, my dear, never for probes. Anything else I'll happily trade, but not that. Gold, silver, gemstones, these I can provide, but not the other." Bender has been slowly backing up, trying to put distance between himself and the dangerous Prove girl, but she won't let him get away. Linnea finally hooks her fingers into his beard rings and draws him close. She whispers something in his ear. He nods fearfully, then whispers something back. Linnea returns to us with a secret smile. "Come along," she says, looking very pleased with herself. "It's not far from here." She leads us behind the stalls into the darkest part of Traderville, to the place where armored thugs guard each shack and love girls beckon from the open windows. You can buy anything in this place, from dice bones to a human life. My first impulse is to cover Littleface's eyes, but I know he's seen worse, like every child on the curb. Linnea doesn't seem to notice all the wickedness and filth. as if somehow it isn't real to her, which makes me think that nothing in the world of normals is quite real to her. Maybe that's why she acts as if nothing can touch her, because she thinks we're all part of an exciting, entertaining game called Prove Princess Visits the Latch. Ryder glances at me and shakes his head. He looks worried, if not for himself, then for the rest of us. It's not unusual for people to enter this part of Traitorville and never be seen again. I'm about to say something when Linnea holds up her hand. Be still, she commands. We must wait here while the Furies check us out. Furies, I'm thinking? What Furies? And then I see them. Figures in black hooded capes creeping out from between the shacks. It's not until they're close enough to touch that I notice the skull masks and the black daggers. And by then it's too late. Chapter 18. Mark of the Assassin. It's amazing how Furies can blend into the shadows without making a sound. Their skull masks are the mark of the assassin, that and the black daggers. I've heard about Furies, of course, but never seen one. Supposedly they have to be female. Not that you can tell the female part. It could be anybody or anything inside the hooded black capes. They say Furies are so cunning and stealthy, their victims die without uttering a sound. All I can do is hold tight to Littleface and hope that Linnea knows what she's doing. Greetings, she says quietly as the Furies move silently around her. We bring offerings to Vida Bleak. My heart clenches when she speaks that name. Vida Bleak is boss of the underworld traders, and in his own way, as powerful as the Latch Queen. He deals in all things stolen or forbidden, and nobody gets the best of him and lives to brag about it. I can tell Ryder has heard of Bleak too, because his eyes are as big as Targa stones. We look at each other, but we don't dare speak, afraid that the wrong word will trigger the Furies. Linnea has no such fear. I'm a child of Eden, she says, ignoring the daggers that dance beneath her elegant nose. Tell Bleak I must see him on a matter of great urgency. Notice she doesn't say please, not even to dagger-waving assassins. My brain tells me the Prove Girl is maddeningly stupid to taunt the Furies, but my heart thinks she's also incredibly brave, braver than I'll ever be. Quickly, Linnea demands. We haven't got all day. That's it, I'm thinking, and I'm hoping the daggers are sharp and true so we won't suffer much. And then before I can let out the breath I've been holding, the Furies seem to vanish, and a small, hairless figure emerges from the darkness. Offerings? The small man asks. Did I hear the word offerings? What have you brought me besides your lives? Vida Bleak stands with his tiny arms folded across his chest, looking up at Linnea with an expression of curiosity. As if he's discovered a rare gemstone he'd just love to pluck from its setting. The only big thing about him is his eyes, which seem to blaze with intelligence and cunning. Linnea is at least twice as tall as Bleak, but he doesn't seem to mind. How big you are doesn't matter when you have the Furies at your command. Whatever it takes, Linnea tells him, that's what I bring. You're rich, he says with a shrug, but then all Proves are rich. What is it you want, exactly? Linnea taps a finger against her forehead. Probes, she says. Mind probes. Bleak's teeth are small, too, when he smiles. There's nothing friendly about the smile, though. It's a smile that wants to chew you into little bits. You can almost hear his mind whirring as he tries to figure an advantage. Behind him, the Furies blend themselves into the darkness, waiting for his command, as silent as eternity. Probing has been forbidden in this latch, he says, as if making idle conversation. You must know that. Many things are forbidden, Linnea says. That just makes them more valuable. Not every forbidden thing carries a sentence of death, Bleak says, rubbing a hand over his hairless head. Do you know what happened to the last mope who said probe to me? I'm not a mope, Linnea reminds him. I'm a child of Eden. Yeah, goes Bleak, sounding unimpressed. But what makes you think proves are invulnerable? If you cut a prove, does she not bleed, Tell you what, child of Eden, we'll have a sit-down. I'll do that much for you. Step into my office. We follow him into a shack. The only light inside the shack is a single candle that barely pushes the shadows back. I figured a man as powerful as Vita Bleak would live in splendor, but everything is plain and unadorned. The walls are bare. The rug on the floor is worn thin. If Bleak has anything to trade, and he must, he doesn't keep it here. Then I realize this isn't really his office. It's just a place of convenience, the nearest shack. He figures we're not worthy enough to need impressing. Bleak settles himself on the rug and bids us to do the same. After we sit, several of the Furies glide in, hugging the walls. Once they've stopped moving, they remain as still as hooded statues. I'm so scared of them, I don't even want to know what they look like under their skull masks. What have we here? Bleak asks, indicating me and Ryder and Littleface. Is this your idea of an escort? These are my friends, Linnea says, and tells him our names. Spaz, Bleak says, looking directly at me. I remember that name. You were banned from this latch, were you not? And now you return in the company of an old man, a boy, and a prove. Very strange. What is your explanation? I try to shrug as casually as possible, like traveling from latch to latch is no big deal. I wanted to visit my family unit, I tell him. Bleak seems to find my explanation amusing. Just drop in and say hello? Something like that. His small teeth shape themselves into a grin. Feel free to lie, boy. I often find lies more interesting than the truth. They say more about the liar. And you, old man, what of you? Ryder spreads his hands. They tremble a little, but not as much as my own. One last adventure, he says. One last chance to see the world before the lights go out. Bleak nods and then turns to Linnea. The most interesting lie remains yours, he tells her. You pretend an interest in probes, and yet I can see at a glance you've never experienced one. Therefore, you want information about probing for some other purpose. Treachery, no doubt. No, says Linnea. Silence! The room seems to shrink as the Furies draw closer. Bleak's eyes blaze as if he's been lit from within by the candle. The light is cruel and angry. You proves have a weakness. You assume that all normals are ignorant. Do you think a man keeps a position like mine by being stupid? Let me tell you something, my fine young prove. I trade in more than forbidden things. I trade in information, and my information tells me you're here to please the Latch Queen by betraying the probe runner. Do you deny this? He asks quietly. Do you? Linnea shakes her head. Good, he says, satisfied. What you may not know is that for some reason, the Latch Queen fears me. She thinks I want to get rid of her and take over the latch myself. She has a point. Why should I pay her tribute, eh? When she does nothing for me, When my Furies can strike without warning. Tell me, who is feared more? The brutish, noisy vandals or my silent, cunning assassins, Bleak doesn't expect an answer. He's telling us his plans because he's so pleased with himself, and because he knows it makes us afraid. Have I shocked you? He asks. Didn't know what you were getting into, did you? Linnea takes a deep breath and says, May we leave? bleak laughs. It sounds like a series of little shrieks, eek, 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 like he stores up all the pain he inflicts and uses it when he laughs. Leave, he says. But we're just becoming acquainted. But we still have to find the probe runner, Linnea insists. Bleak shakes his small, deadly head. You don't get it, do you? Let me ask you this. Who brings us the probes and the equipment to use them? If I knew that, Linnea begins, you know nothing. Probes, probes. Who cares about probes? Not the Latch Queen. She doesn't really want to ban them, she just wants more tribute. But she said, silence, the little man roars, his voice as sharp and cold and quick as a machete blade. Are you really that stupid, Prove? Don't you know that you and probes both come from the same place? That's ridiculous, Linnea says, flustered. No, all probes come from Eden. I don't believe it, says Linnea. No, says Bleak, who seems pleased by her denial. Look around. Do you think we possess the technology to develop mind probes or brain probes or the equipment to make them work? We who beg edibles from the likes of you? We who live in squalor and despair? We who risk our lives to jam needles into our brains so we can pretend to live in Eden until our minds burn out? Your ignorance is an insult. I don't care what that wretched Latch Queen says. You're too stupid to live. Bleak makes a small sign with his left hand, and the Furies advance, daggers raised. Wait! Cries Ryder. That's when the air begins to move. The candle flickers out. Something big is coming. Something big enough to make its own wind. My heart beats once, and then it washes over us. The earth-shaking roar of jet bikes. The scream of attacking vandals. The dull, ugly explosion of splat guns. The Furies vanish in an instant, taking Bleak with them. The walls of the shack split open, and the noise of the jet bike engines is so loud I can't think. Ryder tries to scream something, but I can't hear him. He grabs Littleface and runs through the opening in the walls. Linnea tugs at me, and when I don't move, she slaps my face. That does it. I'm awake now, and following Linnea, following her shimmering white gown, around us the world explodes. I bounce off the side of a jet bike, see the silent screaming face of a Vandal warrior. One of the Furies clings to his back, dagger poised. I don't know what happens next because I'm running into the night, away from the insane roar of the battle, running, running, running for my life. Chapter 19. Spaz Boy melts in the acid rain. Traderville is deserted. The busy stalls have been emptied and boarded up. All that remains are a few metal storage cans some trader must have dropped in his hurry to get away when the Vandals roared through. A light rain falls from the dark sky and goes pip, pip, pip on the hollow cans. Pip, pip, pip. I'm standing there like a Googan with the rain running down the back of my neck. My insides feel as hollow as those stupid empty cans, like I'm going pip, pip, pip inside because I was so scared. Too scared to move until the Prove Girl slapped me. Too scared to help anyone but myself. Too scared to do anything but run. Too scared even to think of Bean. No, that's a lie. That's really why I feel so hollow and miserable. I did think of Bean, but I was wishing she'd never sent for me, wishing I'd never come, blaming her because we got ourselves stuck in the middle of a turf battle between the Latch Queen and her rival. Like it's Bean's fault I'm a rotten coward. So I'm standing out in the acid rain, letting the warm itch of it nibble at my skin, and thinking if it rains long enough, I'll dissolve, and my problems will be over. Spaz Boy melts. Good riddance. I'm thinking about opening my mouth and seeing if maybe I'll drown faster, when Ryder comes limping out of the rain. He's leaning on his walking stick pretty hard, holding himself up, and there's a lot of hurt in his ancient eyes. He gives me a tired old smile and says, "So you made it. Good." Good for what, I'm thinking. You're hurt, I tell him. Just bruised, he says. Nothing serious. One of those horrible jet bikes knocked me down. They'll be the death of me someday, I suppose. But not today. What about the others? Linnea and the boy have gone to get the TAC-V, he says. Then he looks at me, really looks at me, and goes, "What's wrong, son? Have you been wounded?" I shake my head and look away. "Ah," says Ryder knowingly. "You were scared and ran." "So what? We all ran. There were too many of them and not enough of us. What else could we do?" I shrug. "This may work in our favor," Ryder says, trying to cheer me up. "It's obvious the Latch Queen was just using us to get at Vita Bleak and his assassins. Distract him with us while she attacks. I doubt she really cares about the menace of mind probes. Or maybe she does, who knows. The point is, right now she's got her hands full. She'll need all of her people fighting by her side. So the way is clear." I keep staring at the wet ground and go, "Huh?" like a major mope. "Your family unit," says Ryder. "Your sister. The Latch Queen can't spare the men to guard them. Not with a battle going on." If I hadn't been feeling so low down, I'd have thought of that myself. The old man is right. We're almost there, with nothing to stop us if we hurry. Suddenly I can't feel the rain. All I can feel is the need to see Bean. "Be alive," I'm thinking. "Please be alive. I stayed alive for you, now you stay alive for me." A TAC-V is amazingly quiet for a heavily armored vehicle. Linnea glides it up behind us, and the first thing we hear is her voice going, "Come on, quick!" And then, "Linnea, Chalks!" as Littleface chimes in. It turns out she's letting the kid pretend to drive the TAC-V. He's bouncing around at the console, giggling and making all sorts of explosive little kid noises. Probably stuff he picked up when the Vandals attacked. And now it's all part of his pretend game, which is just as well. The proof girl asks me where my family unit lives exactly. When I tell her, she programs the TAC-V and we get underway. Ryder groans a little as he sits down, but waves off any offers to help. "Fortunes of war," he mutters. "War and old age, I'll be fine. Wake me when we get there," he adds, and then falls deeply asleep just like that. Sleep? After what we've been through? I don't know how he does it. My blood still feels electrified. Linnea seems just as jumpy, as if she can barely stop herself from leaping out of the TAC-V and running on her own power. I want to tell her how brave she is, how perfect, but something inside won't let me speak. Maybe because I don't want to remind her of how terrified I'd been when she'd slapped my face and saved my life. "Did you notice?" she asks me, her beautiful eyes glowing with excitement. "Did you see what happened?" I don't know what she's talking about and say so. "They could have canceled us, but they didn't," she whispers, "so we don't wake Ryder. The way those Furies fought, it was as if they were helping us get away. The Vandals, too. The only reason we're alive is because they wanted us to survive." "Because you approve?" "I don't know," she says, puzzled. "Maybe. But I think something else is going on. We were caught in the middle of a power struggle between the Latch Queen and an ambitious crime boss, right? We broke all the rules on both sides. But when they had a chance to cancel us, they didn't. And it wasn't just because I'm approved." "Then why?" "I think it had something to do with you. The Latch Queen was expecting you. So was Vita Bleak. Excuse me, but why would they even be aware of some spastic nobody?" "Nobody?" I say as my face gets hot. "That's my point, silly, because you're not a nobody. You're important enough to attract the attention of all those powerful people. Billy Bismo, Lottie Getz, Vita Bleak. Why is that?" "I don't know," I tell her. "I never thought about it." "Maybe you should," Linnea says. "Think about it, I mean." But there isn't room in my head right now for thinking about things I don't understand. There's only room for hoping that Bean will still be there, and that she isn't as bad off as the runner made it sound. As we get closer, I start to recognize more and more of the old neighborhood. The cellar holes where we played hide or cancel, the stalls where we traded for edibles, the alleys where we chose up teams and pretended to be Vandals fighting the invaders. There's nobody on the streets now, though. No enforcers, No kids going wild in the night. No frightened folk scuttling from door to door. They must be hunkered down inside their shelters, aware of the not-so-distant battle. Not knowing if Lottie Getz and her gang will remain in power, or if Vita Bleak and his Furies will take over the latch. We're almost there, I say. Ryder wakes up. There's pain and worry in his bleary old eyes, but joy and triumph too. He squeezes my shoulder. Are you ready for this, son? It may not be easy. My mouth feels like dry sand. I know. This is what I know. The only thing worse than finding Bean dead will be watching her die. Get ready for worse, spaz boy, my brain says. You, of all people, should know there's nothing so bad it can't get worse. Chapter 20. What Bean Believed. Once when she was 4 years old, Bean decided she wanted to go to Eden. She didn't know it was a real place. She thought we could walk there with our eyes closed and just pretend. Walk me to Eden, she asked me. Please, please, please. So I took her hand, and we walked out through the dark alley behind our building, and then farther, until I found a patch of sunshine among the ruins. Do you feel that? I said, as the sun warmed our faces. That's Eden shining on us. Bean kept her eyes closed the whole time because she didn't want to spoil it. She never told Charlie or Kay because it was our secret. The bad thing is, from then on, Bean thought I could do just about anything. I'd taken her to Eden, and so I could make it stop raining, or fix a boo-boo, or make Charlie and Kay stop fighting, or make her better when she got sick. All you have to do is close your eyes, she'd say. Make it happen, please. I wish I could close my eyes now. Then I wouldn't see the bullet marks above the door of my old family shelter, or the coils of cut wire blocking the entrance. The bullet marks and the cut wire have always been there, ever since I can remember, but they still make me sad. At first, nothing happens when I bang my fist on the door. Then an eye fills the peephole, and Charlie unlocks and opens up. You, he says, sounding surprised. Not angry or disappointed, just surprised. A moment later, Kay, my foster mom, she comes running in. As soon as she sees me, her eyes fill with tears. She doesn't hug me or anything. Kay was never much for hugs. Instead, she hugs her own arms and says, Who are these people? She means Ryder and Littleface. These are my friends, I say, and introduce them. Littleface hides behind me, acting shy. Ryder gives a little bow, bending forward over his walking stick, and says, very formal, Pleased to meet you, madam. And then Linnea comes out from behind the door, and Charlie almost falls down. Oh, he says, oh. I don't know if Charlie's ever seen a Prove up close before, and it's like he doesn't want to see her now, or he's afraid to look but can't help staring. Probably he doesn't know what to think or how to act. I brought you some edibles, Linnea says, holding out a small bag. Kay takes the bag like it might explode. I've come to see Bean, I manage to say. Where is she?
Our daughter is sick, Charlie mutters. Very sick.
She's been asking for you, Kay says, so softly she can barely be heard. I told her you couldn't come. I told her it was against the rules. Nobody tries to stop me as I cross the outer room and find the entrance to Bean's cubicle. When I draw back the curtains, my hands feel so light, it's like they're not connected to my arms. At first, I think she's not there, because the mat on the floor looks empty, just a couple of scruffy old blankets. And then the blankets move, and a skull-like face peeks out at me, with big eyes sunk in dark circles. There are lumps on her neck from swollen glands. Spaz, Bean says, wheezing. I knew you'd come. I knew it. Then I'm kneeling beside the mat and pressing my wet face against her face, and I'm so glad she's alive. I don't care how bad she looks. She's still Bean inside. You can hear it in her voice. But when I draw back to look at her again, she's so thin and pale and wasted away it almost stops my heart. Oh, Bean, I say, I'm sorry. Don't be sorry, she says. My dad said you couldn't come, but you know what? He sent for you anyhow. So Charlie had paid for the latch runner. I know he did it for Bean and not for me, but I don't care. I'm here, and that's all that matters. Later, Kay tells me the healer stopped coming 10 days ago. There's nothing more she can do. No one can stop the blood sickness. Bean takes a remedy, but it doesn't help. Ryder has settled his old bones on the floor, and he looks so peaceful it makes me feel better. The disease used to be called leukemia, he tells us, and I think they had real cures for it in the back times. What kind of cures, I demand. Ryder shakes his head. Sorry, son, I've no idea. The knowledge was lost long ago. Then why'd you mention it? It's just backtimer bull, that's all it is, I say, feeling cranked enough to hit someone. I'm not really mad at the old man. I'm mad at the blood sickness. I'm mad because there's nothing we can do except wait for the worst to happen. From Ryder's expression, you can tell he regrets mentioning the cure they supposedly had before the big shake ruined the world. He touches a hand to his lips as if to say, "You're right, let me be silent." Linnea looks at me and goes, "May I see her?" And so we go back into Bean's cubicle. She's asleep, but there's a smile on her face. When she hears us enter, her eyes open and then get wider. She stares at Linnea and says, in a hushed voice, "You're so beautiful. I've never seen anyone so beautiful. You must be from Eden." That's my Bean, still sharper and smarter and quicker than anybody. Sick as she is, she glommed right away that Linnea can't look so perfect and be a normal like the rest of us. "That's right," Linnea says, crouching by the mat. She puts her hand on Bean's forehead and says, "Where does it hurt?" "It hurts everywhere, but only a little," Bean says, almost cheerfully. "Are you my brother's love mate?" Linnea laughs. "No, we're not love mates. As a matter of fact, I don't think your brother likes me very much. He thinks I'm spoiled and headstrong and always get my own way." "Linnea brought us here," I tell Bean. That makes up for everything else. Linnea gives me a funny look, but I can tell she likes what I said, and it's obvious she likes Bean. Of course you can't help but like Bean. Even a proof can't help it. Bean and Linnea talk for a while, girl talk kinds of things, but they don't seem to mind that I'm listening. And every now and then Bean goes, "Isn't that right, Spaz?" Or, "Remember, Spaz?" and tells a lot of funny stories about what a silly googan I used to be. Pretty soon I'm laughing along with her. And for some reason I'm even starting to think she doesn't look so bad. I'm thinking maybe the healer is wrong and she'll get better like she did that last time. "I'll leave you with your big brother," Linnea says, standing up. "I'll go help your mom prepare some edibles." "You need to eat, Bean. We need to fatten you up." "I'm not hungry anymore," she says, and my heart sinks. When Linnea's gone, Bean smiles at me and says, "I think she likes you. You two should get married." "Silly girl," I tell her. "Proves can't marry normals, and I'm not even a normal." "You are too normal." "I'm a deef," I remind her. "I've got a genetic defect, remember?" Bean sighs and settles back on her mat. "I hate that word, deef. It's just a word," I tell her. "Kay told me you've been taking your remedy." Bean looks at me. "It's only honey, water, and stuff to make it taste icky," she says. "It doesn't do any good. But you're gonna be okay," I tell her. Her skinny little hands reach out from under the blankets. They feel cool and dry and weak, like old people's hands. "I'm glad you came," she says. "I was afraid you'd never see me again, and the last thing you'd remember was me fighting with Dad and those names he called me. You mustn't hate him, Spaz. He can't help what he did." "I don't hate him," I say. "I don't hate anybody." "You're gonna get better, Bean. You have to." "Sure I'll get better," Bean says. But she doesn't believe it, and neither do I. "Remember how you used to tell me stories so I'd take my remedy?" "I remember." "Tell me a story, Spaz. Tell me a story where everybody lives happily ever after. So I tell her stories until she falls asleep.
Chapter 21. A Sleep Like Death. Later that night, after we'd made a meal of the edibles, and Littleface entertained us all by singing a song that only had one word, you can guess the word. Later that night, my foster sister Bean lies back on her mat and closes her eyes. So far, she hasn't opened them again. The healer comes and runs her hands over Bean and tells us she's entered the long sleep and that she'll probably never wake up. Ryder says the real word is coma. But what does it matter about words when the only person you've ever loved and whoever loved you is dying? I'm truly sorry, my boy, Ryder says, bowing his head. This isn't what I had in mind when we began our great adventure. He says it so gentle and kind, I have to run outside and kick at the bullet-scarred wall. Mostly I'm mad at myself. I knew when we left the latch that Bean didn't have much of a chance if the blood sickness came back strong. So what was I thinking? That she'd get better just because I showed up? Like I was her personal cure or something, huh? What a mope, what a googan, what a spaz. I'm sitting on the gutter curb thinking the world is stupid if this is what happens to the best person ever born. What's the point if you have to live behind cut wire and steel doors and be afraid of gangs and then get sick and die because normals are too numb to remember the cure? I'm thinking maybe letting the latches burn is the right idea. Let everything burn until there's nothing left but cold ashes and clear rain. I'm there on the gutter curb for a long time when Ryder comes out with Linnea. They sit down on either side of me. Ryder folds his hands on his walking stick, and when he speaks, his voice sounds younger than usual. We've got a new plan, he announces. A new adventure. Would you like to hear it? I haven't got the energy to tell him I'm no longer interested in his adventures, so I just shrug. Remember I said they used to have a cure for Bean's disease? He begins. Well, I got to thinking that maybe the knowledge still exists somewhere in a slightly different form. The old geese has my attention. This better be real, I tell him, not some story you made up for your stupid book. Ryder sighs. I think there's a real enough chance, but there's no guarantee. It will be dangerous and difficult. Linnea has agreed to help. I notice Linnea's nose is red where she's been crying. So even proofs get red noses, which means they're not as perfect as they say. What can you do to help, I ask her. What can anybody do to help Bean? Ryder and Linnea look at each other, then at me. We can take her to Eden, says the proof girl. Chapter 22. Their Terrible Swift Engines. No surprise, Charlie is against it. Normals aren't allowed to leave the herb for any reason, he says, his voice trembling. A normal entering the forbidden zone will be canceled immediately. That's rule number one. We learn it as children. Rules are made to be broken, Ryder tells him gently. Charlie's face gets all twisted up. Easy for you to say, old man, but this is my daughter. Why should I let you risk her life? When nobody says anything, Charlie has to think about it. He knows she hasn't got much life left to risk. I don't know, he mutters. All I know is normals don't go to Eden. He can't or won't look at Linnea, and when she reaches out to touch his shoulder, he moans like he's been hit by a splat gun. Charlie, she says, that rule you learn as children? You're right, of course. A normal trying to cross on his own would be destroyed automatically. But there's no rule about entering while under my protection, as my guest. Whatever happens, I won't let them cancel her. You have my word. Kay hugs Charlie from behind and rests her head on his shoulder. She's already gone from us, Charlie. What harm can it do? He goes, it's wrong, is all. But the fight's gone out of him. And when Kay gives us the nod, he doesn't say no. I figure we better get moving before they change their minds. Ryder comes into Bean's cubicle with me, but I don't need any help. Bean doesn't weigh much, and it's nothing at all to carry her in my arms. Charlie and Kay have gone into their own cubicle like they can't bear to see her leave.
Linnea unbolts the locks, opens the door, and holds back the cut wire to let me pass. "She's so thin," says Linnea, "so very thin and pale. We'll find a way to help her. We must." I carry Bean down the steps where we used to play Boss of the Latch, over the concrete patch where she chalked her hop skip, and into the waiting taxi. I keep hoping Bean will wake up a little, but she doesn't move even when the seat adjusts itself around her. As if waking up would take too much strength when it's all her frail little body can do to keep breathing. "Bean," I whisper, "can you hear me? I'm taking you to Eden, like I promised when you were little. Keep your eyes closed until we get there, okay?" I'm climbing back out of the hatch to check on Little Face when the ground starts shaking. Something is coming, and knowing what it is, what it must be, it makes my heart sink down into my boots. Sure enough, the air thrums, and then suddenly an army of jet bikes comes roaring out of nowhere, lighting the night with the flames of their terrible swift engines. The battle is over, and the Vandals are victorious. They ride through the streets bare-chested to show off their wounds. They whoop and holler and pull along their roped-up prisoners. The Furies look small and ordinary with their hooded cloaks torn to rags and their skull masks gone. They look as if they never could have won. But then again, Ryder says the defeated always look beaten and hopeless. I look for Vita Bleak among the prisoners, but he's nowhere to be seen. "Lottie, Lottie," the Vandals chant. "Lottie Getz always wins. Lottie Getz." Lottie Getz, the Latch Queen, shows off her winning ways by straddling two jet bikes. She waves her shetty blade high above her head in triumph. When she spots me, her victory smile widens. She makes a motion, and instantly the jet bikes go silent. "Still here, Spaz boy? You had your chance to escape. What stopped you?" I can't think of what to say. "What's the matter, boy? Rat got your tongue?" Ryder comes up behind me. "We're on a mission of mercy," he explains, "trying to save the life of a young woman." The Latch Queen seems amused by the idea. "And what do you want from me?" she asks. "Arms? Escort? What?" "Nothing, my lady," Ryder says. "You help me trap my enemy and ask nothing in return?" "Only what you pledged, my lady. Free passage out of the Latch. After that, we're on our own." The Latch Queen points her shetty blade at me. "You, Spaz boy. What do you have to say for yourself, huh? Nothing? Have you gone mute?" she demands. Ryder nudges me. "I'm too scared to talk," I say, fighting to get the words out. You can tell the Latch Queen likes the idea. "Scared? Scared of me, Spaz boy? Why ever should you be scared of me?" she cackles. "I'm scared my sister will die if we don't hurry." She snorts and makes a face, as if disgusted to hear of such weakness. "Then be off, the lot of you. Go on, get out of here." We're hurrying into the taxi when the shetty blade flashes in my face and stops so close to my nose I can smell the warm steel. "One last thing, Spaz boy," the Latch Queen says, breathing into my ear. "Be sure and tell Billy Bismo about my victory. Tell him to think twice before he brings battle to the White Widow." She laughs, tickling me with the steel. "I gave myself that name, didn't you know?